proceed to the fifth case, Smielski v. Gonzalez. Mr. Klisch?
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
May it please the Court, my name is Michael Klisch, and I represent the respondent in this matter, Mr. Stefan Smielski. In this case, Your Honor, as in all typical asylum cases, the burden is upon the petitioner to show, number one, that he suffered past persecution, number two, that there is a reasonable belief of future persecution. Additionally, in such cases as this, there is a claim for withholding of removal, which holds a higher standard than the asylum cases. And additionally, there is also a request in this case as towards the torture convention, which was a new manner of relief that was issued for individuals to take advantage of. In this case, Mr. Smielski, I believe, was not provided with a proper review of his case by the Immigration Court as well as the Board of Immigration Appeals. From the outset, the court seemed to color its views due to the fact that when Mr. Smielski entered the country, he made an alleged representation that he was a citizen of the United States. As the court set forth during the course of the hearing, and as counsel properly set forth in their brief, I, as counsel at that time, didn't make any motion to remove the case from Chicago back to Los Angeles. The problem was he entered the United States in San Isidro, California, filed a case initially in Los Angeles, and then the case was removed to Chicago, where he had a support system plus a Ukrainian-speaking attorney that could help him address his case better. So at the time that the case was removed from Los Angeles to Chicago, the attorney who did that has to admit all the allegations or the case cannot be removed. That's just procedure in the immigration court. The immigration judge allowed me to take the case back to Los Angeles, but I wouldn't see any benefit in doing that to address that one issue, and that's why that issue was not litigated by me. I'd have to do that in Los Angeles, and this case would have been going back and forth. But taking that one point, I think, is very important because it seems that throughout the record, the court keeps on referring that the credibility is weak because right from the outset we have a person who is claiming that they're a United States citizen, so how can we trust the statements that the person is making in this matter? Mr. Smielski clearly set forth three separate personal instances of past persecution. The first instance, which took place on March 31st of 1999, at the time of his hearing was in more detail than was set forth in his application, and the court addressed this as well. Well, why didn't he set this forth in his application? I can't give you that answer, Your Honor. I didn't prepare that application. But in the course of preparing for the trial, Mr. Smielski related this matter, and the matter was presented to the court at the time of the hearing. There was a reference to a case, Korniev, which the Seventh Circuit decided, which I'm familiar with because I was the attorney for the petitioner in that matter, which stated that, and as the court noted, that Mr. Smielski should have remembered the events that took place in this case because they were so violent and abusive in nature, then how could he have forgotten it when he put it in his application? The court in Korniev, however, when they were relating that case, stated that the problem was that the petitioner in that matter failed to address issues that gave rise to her immediate when she left Europe for the United States from her native Poland. So it was the most recent event that she didn't remember, and that was the reason why her case was denied, because if she couldn't remember the most recent event, it sort of tended to cloud her credibility. In this matter, it's the first event that Mr. Smielski refers to, and the rest of the events, the court didn't even note that there were any problems between the application or his testimony, which the court couldn't because it was exactly as on point as can be between an application and oral testimony.
I thought there was a discrepancy in the description of the two events to the extent that in his testimony he asserted that he had been beaten, and that was not included in the application, and that's the discrepancy that the IJ was referring to and putting some weight on, because a beating is obviously an invasive occurrence that, without some explanation, ought to be remembered and included in an application.
Right, and I agree, Your Honor, and as I stated, I can't give an answer for that. Mr. Smielski was questioned by the court why that wasn't put in, and he didn't give a positive response to the court as well, and I agree that that lessens the credibility of his case. But I also asked the court to remember also, and as is set forth in this case, an individual may not have the ability to set something forth in application when he's setting it forth, and something later on may trigger and may allow the person to relay this information. They may have suppressed this. As was set forth in this matter, Mr. Schmihalski actually attended psychiatric evaluations at the Marjorie Kovler Center in Chicago, and during the course of those meetings with the staff members there, it was determined that he had post-traumatic, I want to get this right, Your Honor, so I apologize, traumatic stress disorder and major depressive disorder. And perhaps by talking with the individuals at the Kovler Center, that helped him remember this frightening event, which for some reason he didn't relay. Now, I'm not trying to explain away why this didn't happen, and Mr. Schmihalski should have told the court what he should have told. This is just what I'm presenting to the court that may have occurred.
On the false claim of citizenship,
yes.
It's not your argument that he did not falsely claim to be a U.S. citizen. It's your argument that too much weight was put on that as a credibility factor?
Or? I think too much weight is put on it, Your Honor, and also we have to remember the person that is there. This is a person that doesn't know the English language. And if somebody says, are you a citizen? He could say yes. And for me, what I'm saying is too much weight was put on that because, yes, if a person says he's a citizen in the United States, it's a misrepresentation. I agree. But the person doesn't understand the question, and the only way would have been to determine what the mindset of the person was to litigate that back in Los Angeles where the officer was. Maybe that's what should have been done by the counsel in Los Angeles, but it wasn't done.
Well, when the issue came up here, though, did he attempt to explain it? Or
I could not explain it. As the court said to me, if you want to counsel, you can take it back to Los Angeles.
So you were precluded from explaining
it? I wasn't precluded, Your Honor, but I wouldn't see a benefit in taking it all the way back to Los Angeles and then more likely than not the case coming back to Chicago.
Mr. Kliss, did you make in response to Judge Sykes about your speculation on what might have occurred, did you make that the similar argument to the IJ?
I'm trying to think, Your Honor, and I don't believe so.
What's the present situation? I guess you have to look at to some extent, but if Yushchenko is the president, and aren't there, what is it, the Rukh
party? The Rukh party, yes.
Aren't there members of parliament?
There are certain members of parliament, Your Honor, but then I'll also, you know, if there's a question about country conditions, I'm sure Your Honors are familiar with the alleged poisoning of the presidential candidate before he became president. Now, the court was very clear, the immigration judge was very clear in setting forth that, oh, this is a low-level person. Why would anybody worry about a low-level person? Well, I present to the court that a question of human rights violations and a claim for asylum is not only from persons in higher levels of office. It's for everybody in that country.
Yeah, but
so
well,
there
see,
still
that,
is a problem.
That's the problem without really emphasizing this beating in the first place. And then the present conditions, well, whatever they are, it's certainly not the people in power. There may be others who want to be in power who are causing lots of problems, but doesn't that affect just about everybody? And if you got whatever it is, 18 members of parliament, and there's a lot of people, I mean, things aren't as good as we'd like them.
I agree, Your Honor.
They're not as bad as they were.
They're not as bad as they were, but they're not as good as they could be, I guess I could answer. But the fact is we're looking at this one particular person. We're looking at the past history of this particular person, the person's belief as to the reasonable belief of this person of further persecution. That's what we're looking at. The country conditions may have changed, but in relation to what? The country conditions on the top level may look good, but the lower level where this individual was operating as a low level, as he stated in his testimony, agitator, a person who goes around and talks about the party and the policies, may have not changed.
Well, the mayor that he didn't like got beat, right?
Excuse me?
The mayor that was giving him problems got beat, didn't
That's
he?
Correct.
Yeah.
Which I guess is good for the population there, Your Honor.
Do you want to reserve a little bit?
I think I have some time for rebuttal that I reserve.
Yeah, we're into it. Okay, thank you, Mr. Klisch. Ms. Bosk?
May it please the Court, Ada Bosk for the United States. Good morning. Good morning.
Where you're from.
Excuse me?
Say
no, not where I'm from. Mr. Schmalski has not pointed to any evidence that compels reversal of the board's decision that he was not credible and that he was, I guess, counsel didn't address it, but the other issue that he raised was the exclusion of the oral testimony of his therapist. He hasn't, therefore, provided any evidence that compels a finding that that exclusion prejudiced him, in Mr. Schmelsky, in any way. This case was considered by an asylum officer, an immigration judge, and the board, and none of those entities, after full and fair hearings, found that Mr. Schmelsky was entitled to relief. Here, the board, to address the credibility issue first, it accepted the three reasons that the immigration judge identified for finding Mr. Schmelsky incredible, and it identified a fourth. So in his brief, Mr. Schmelsky argues that the board did not thoroughly consider this, and we believe the board's opinion shows the reverse, that it did look through all the evidence, and it nevertheless concluded that Mr. Schmelsky did not present a credible case. And there were four reasons for that. Mr. Schmelsky... counsel addressed at least two of them. The first, of course, is the misrepresentation upon entry that he claimed to be a United States citizen. Although counsel seems to be argued, he agreed that he wasn't precluded from challenging that. Throughout the proceedings, he conceded the contents of the 2113, which is the report on admissibility, and the statements in the notice to appear. So if there was a time to challenge whether he made that misrepresentation, whether there was a time to explain away the misrepresentation, if one was made, it was during that process, not here before this court. And certainly, he also mentioned the idea of going back to Los Angeles and coming to Chicago. We would respond in two ways. First, when Mr. Schmelsky moved initially for a change of venue, it was done over the government's objections because we would be unable or it would be more difficult for us to present our witnesses. And the immigration judge at that point granted the change of venue nevertheless. So that argument isn't entirely as persuasive as the counsel might think. The second reason, of course, is if you're going to dispute something, then you have to afford us a fair opportunity to provide the witnesses that would contradict or would explain the reasons why in the statement, in the report of inadmissibility, the officers felt that Mr. Schmelsky had, in fact, misrepresented himself to be a United States citizen. The board weighed that, as did the IJ, in addition to the three other points. So it's not as if that one instance was the basis for the determination that he was not credible. In fact, the immigration judge's decision clearly points out that that in and of itself would not have been sufficient because it's not necessarily tied to the asylum application or the request for cat protection. But there were other reasons why Mr. Schmelsky was found incredible. The court has pointed to at least one of them, and that is that the situation in the Ukraine has dramatically changed from when Mr. Schmelsky claimed he had been persecuted, and he was unable to explain why he continued to fear persecution. There's a part in his testimony when he's explaining that that he never reported or never challenged the October detention because they were waiting for the elections to see what was going to happen. And as we know, as the record shows, the mayor that he had protested against lost the election, and at that point, the incumbent candidate for the presidential elections was an individual that was supported by the Rook Party, if I'm pronouncing that right. All the evidence that Mr. Schmelsky was presented with suggested that the situation had changed, but he could provide no explanation as to why he continued to fear persecution nevertheless and torture. The third specific reason that the board identified was his inconsistency in testifying about the May 1st demonstration. And then, of course, there is the absence from his application of any mention of a beating in the March 31st, on March 31st of, I believe it was 99. And that credibility issue is significant because it is not just another factor in his asylum application. At the hearing, it was the heart of his claim. And it's not, as Mr. Schmelsky presented here today, that he simply didn't include all the details in his application. There's no mention of a beating at all, and the story that is told in the application is significantly different. And we believe that the IJ and the board correctly interpreted this court's precedent, and it's not just in a Cordova decision, which I apologize, I'm probably mispronouncing. In a number of other cases, this court has found that it is reasonable to expect situations that are particularly invasive to be mentioned. It's not as if it was, as counsel argued, that perhaps he suppressed it. Well, he did mention in his application a different beating, a beating that apparently was significantly less evasive than the beating he received allegedly in March. So he wasn't suppressing things. He just simply testified to something that was completely different than what was presented in his application. I'm going to quickly go through the issues of corroboration, which counsel also didn't address. But Mr. Schmalsky had 3.5 years to prepare his case. He provided a volume of newspaper articles, but none of those articles related to any of the events that he testified to. He testified that there was coverage of the March demonstrations and the May demonstrations. And indeed, if anything, if the documents that he did provide show anything, it shows that they're pretty extensive coverage when there are demonstrations of that sort. But he provided no newspaper articles that even related to those. He provided an affidavit from Mr. Petrovich, so it wasn't that he could not obtain information from the Ukraine, which is something that is also suggested in the brief. He obtained an affidavit from his friend, who he testified participated in the march, or at least was present during the March demonstration, but the affidavit doesn't speak to that at all. In fact, the affidavit doesn't refer to Mr. Schmalsky at all. So lastly, of course, he provided the report of the therapist, which was admitted, which was not refuted, it was not otherwise contradicted. The addition of the exclusion, I should say, of her oral testimony would not affect the outcome of this case. The only proffer that Mr. Schmalsky made was that she would address the issues that were addressed by Mr. Schmalsky on cross-examination. This is not the case like in this court's decision in Podio, where the witnesses that were excluded were witnesses who had actually experienced the same type of persecution and torture. Mr. Schmalsky's therapist was not in the Ukraine. She could not testify firsthand to the situation there. At best, she could address who provided her with the credible fear interview report, when Mr. Schmalsky began taking therapy, and when he concluded taking therapy. Those are the issues on cross-examination, and none of those issues at all relate to have the potential to affect the outcome, because none of them relate to his asylum, his withholding, or his CAT claim. So for those reasons and the reasons set forth in our brief, we ask that the court affirm the decision of the board. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Both. Mr. Klesch.
Thank you, Your Honors. I just want to address a few points that counsel has raised in her argument today. Number one, there was no hearing before an asylum officer. I think that's important. When Mr. Schmalsky entered the United States, there was a credible fear determination, and at that time there was a determination that he had credible fear and that he could thus be remanded and file an application for asylum in the United States. Secondly, the affidavit of his friend, Mr. Nesenyuk, sets forth the event which gave rise to Mr. Schmalsky to leave the Ukraine. It is the event that happened to his friend, and his friend relates to that event that shows that event. It doesn't talk about any March 31st or October 27th because it's not talking about it. It's talking about an attempt at his friend's life which took place in the year 2000. Finally, there was argument regarding the changed circumstances. I agree, there are changed circumstances, but to link the elections in 2004 with events that took place to Mr. Schmalsky in 1999 is a bit of a stretch. If there are no further questions, Your Honor, I thank you for your time this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Klesch. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.